Hey, really good to be back with you guys. It's been a couple years since I was here, and everything's the same. Looks exactly the same. The students have changed. You guys have changed a little bit. Those of you that were freshmen are looking really old, getting ready to leave. And those of you that weren't here yet, you're taking over the place now, aren't you? Right, right. But everything else is as it was. I did notice you were playing Coldplay's new Viva La Vida when I walked in. That's different. You weren't doing that a couple years ago, at least not when I was here. This morning, I want the opportunity just to talk to you a little bit about the subject of holiness. I know that's the topic for the day. It's kind of what they've asked me to speak on. This morning, I want to speak to you a little bit about what you look like, to me. Because I know you're all looking at me figuring out what I look like, and I'm sorry for that. Have you ever come across one of these things before? It's a mirror. Now, I'm asking for a reason, for some of you anyway. I mean, you woke up this morning. If you woke up this morning and you did not look into a mirror at any time before you got to chapel today, let me see your hand. All right. Yeah, you know where this is going, don't you? Apart from the discovery of fire and the discovery of the wheel, it could be that a mirror was one of the best inventions humanity has ever come up with. And do you know why? Because prior to that, whenever we went outside and we went around and talked to people, we had no idea what we looked like. You just, you know, you'd say, I think I'm doing okay. You'd have no idea the pain that you were inflicting on the rest of us before you got. I mean, you might have looked like you just French kissed a light socket, but you wouldn't know that. Because, don't try this at home. Because unless you look and you see yourself in the mirror, you know, how do you know what you look like, right? Have you never got ready to leave the room, and as you walked out the door, you looked in a mirror, something caught you, and went, whoa, I better change that. Or, and now some of you, as you get older, I'm talking about the professors here now. Oh, they have mirrors that lie. They'll put them up, and when you get older, you kind of go, whoa, man. You suck it in. Because the mirror tells you what you look like to somebody else. Well, I was wondering, what if there were mirrors that tell us what we look like, spiritually speaking? I mean, here's why. You can get ready to leave the room and think you look one way until you look into one of these mirrors. And then you realize that's not how you look at all to the rest of us. This is a more realistic impression of what you're really sending off. So maybe if you could find one, some of you that didn't look in one today, if you could find one and you could look at it and you would say, wait a second, that's not what I thought I looked like spiritually. Fortunately, I think there are such mirrors. More than one. I'll give you just one this morning. I think it's the mirror of relationships. I think if you want to know what you look like, really, in your holiness, you have to measure your holiness, at least in part, by the relationships that you have with other people. At the heart of the Christian gospel is this belief on the incarnation. Now, in the incarnation, God comes down as a human being. Are you with me? Jesus comes. Well, that was the first thought that struck me. Hold on to this. But what if Jesus comes not as self, but as other? That was a relatively new thought for me. What if Jesus comes into my life not as me, so I'm not as I think I am, but what if he comes into my life as you, and so every time I encounter you, I'm encountering something of the divine God that is in you. So basically, if I stink at relationships, but I think I'm a really holy person. Maybe I'm not as holy as I thought I was. You and I like to think of the first two commandments like this. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then love your neighbor as much as you love yourself. And we tend to work in that way. We tend to say, well, I know I love God with all my heart. Now he's going to teach me how to love the person next to me. But I got thinking, what if we have these switched around? Because at least in 1 John chapter 4, he says that no one has ever seen God, but if we love people in our hearts, God's love is manifested in us. Now watch what he says about six verses later. He says, the person who says, I love God, but does not love his brother, is a liar. He says, because if we cannot love our brother whom we have seen, how then can we love God whom we have not seen? Well, that makes wonderful sense. So then I stopped asking myself, how is God going to teach me how to love other people? And I switched it around. Maybe I already love God only as much as I love other people. So now other people become the mirror. And I get ready to leave in the morning and I look out and say, how are the relationships that I have with other people? If they're good, then I'm loving God. But if they're not in good shape right now, it doesn't matter how well I worship in chapel. None of that counts right now, because somehow God is inside of other people. So now, instead of asking God to teach me how to love you, I need you to teach me how to love God. That was a big change for me. In church services, we will get together like this. I mean, I liken a lot of things to sports, and this is kind of the way church is. In sports, in football season, they have what they call huddles, if you don't watch this. This is when the whole team gets on the side, they create their plan, they look on their wrist, they call in a number 7. They look on the wrist, and they got the play written down on the quarterback's wrist. Quarterback then relays that play to the team in the huddle, and then they get up to the line of scrimmage, and when the quarterback walks up to the line of scrimmage, he looks out over the defense and they are not behaving as they were supposed to behave. I mean, they're not all lined up the way that the play in the huddle said they were going to do. When I was a kid, we did the same thing. We'd get into a little huddle, we'd plan our next steps, and then we'd go up to the line. And Ron Visser, I remember the dude. Man, I'm like 15 years old and this guy is humongous. Guy to be like 280 pounds, and he's just a couple years older than me, and the guy's like a rock, and he's playing nose tackle. He would just stand there and wait for the ball to snap. Now, my thing was, the moment I snap the ball, I'm supposed to bump Ron and then roll out into the flat for a little pass. It don't ever work. Ron just waits for you to hike the ball. He just grabs you, and he throws you like a toy on the side. So you're like, boom, 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 boom. And then he goes into the backfield, and he eats my quarterback alive. We go into the back. Next play, huddle. Tim goes, man, what happened up there? I said, Ron Visser happened up there. He's a mutant. The guy's bigger than life. He eats people. And he would say, chop block him. Well, that's not fair. It isn't my league. And so we'd hike the ball, and I go to chop block him, and Ron just go, boom, and goes in and eats my quarterback. I'd go back and say, what happened? Ron Visser happened. We don't have a plan for Visser. That was the deal. Christians are that way. Church is that way. We get together in church, and we say, how are we all going to act? How are we going to act? We're going to live like Jesus. Everybody say, yeah, live like Jesus. And then we leave. We walk out of chapel and some idiot cuts us off. Right? We have to go back to the dorm and live with somebody who eats the stuff out of the fridge. Our stuff. They set the alarm for 6 a.m. every morning and hit it 6 times. They wear your stuff and then they stretch it. So you can't wear it. That's viscer. Then you turn around and go, I'm not doing too well. Come back to chapel on Wednesday, and some dude's going to get up and say, well, what are we going to do? Live like Jesus? Yeah, we can. Walk back out, and some professor is going to be waxing eloquent about nothing. And he goes, I can't believe you think this is important. That's viscer. Do you see it? So I kept asking myself, God, how do I love the viscers? And then it occurred to me, viscers have to teach me to love God, because I already only love God as much as I love viscer. So I started reading through the Sermon on the Mount. And as you know, in the Sermon on the Mount, there are six antithetical statements. They're all in Matthew chapter 5. You don't need to turn. And in all six of these statements, Jesus says to us, you have heard, but I say. And he creates something of an antithesis. Not really, but he's trying to take his kingdom, his way of living, and make it better than the Old Testament. And there are six of those statements. And here's what struck me. Every single one of these statements are about people. All six of them are about relationships. If we think that we can live holiness outside of relationships, we're mistaken, because inevitably you're going to have to leave your classroom and get out of your chapel and get out of your little monastery, as valuable as it is. And you have to go out and live with the vicars. And if you can't do it, you can't live the Sermon on the Mount, because it's all about getting along with people. So I ask myself, if Jesus comes not as self, but as others, maybe he comes to us in all six of these situations. Now, I'm not going to give you all six. Relax. But maybe he comes to me like the other person in the Sermon on the Mount. Let me give you an example. Jesus says to you, I will come to you as someone who is misunderstood or who misunderstands you. I will come to you as someone with whom you are having an argument. And you and I know this game, don't we? When we have arguments with people, we humanly tend to withdraw from them and put distance between ourselves. And here is why that kills us. Because the moment we're having a fight with somebody and we put distance there, we start to interpret their motives for them. They're no longer in the conversation, so they can no longer interpret themselves. Now we do all the interpretation. Are you with me? And we know how to sabotage relationships if it's not going well. Have you ever played a game called Jenga? Yeah, you know the game. The game where they stack up the little, what are they, pegs? Something like that. And you try to pull the pegs out without causing the tower to tumble. And if you're really good at this, you can do it so you can pull pegs out and the tower doesn't fall. But you can set it up so your opponent, when they pull the peg out, there is no peg to pull except the one that will make the tower fall. Played my daughter when she was younger, and I could still beat her. And I would set it up, and then she would go, I'm going to take this one, Daddy. Yeah, go ahead, take that one. And she'd pull it. And when she'd pull it, I'd watch it shake, and I'm going, yeah, baby. And then she'd pull that peg and the thing would go boom and the whole thing would collapse. And she'd go, ah, and I would go, oh. Turn around and go, yes. She's like 10. I beat a 10-year-old. We can do that in relationships. Relationships that aren't going well. Someone that feels like they're on the outside, they're not part of our group. We know how to sit in a dorm, don't we? We know how to look at somebody else while they're talking and just kind of go, We know when to roll our eyes. We know when to say, whatever. We know when to be silent. We know how to exaggerate. We know how to tell the story just a little differently so it favors us. Yet this is where holiness is most important, in that relationship with someone with whom you do not agree. Jesus has a better way. He says there will come a day when you come into chapel and they're serving communion right down here. And while they're asking you to come forward to take communion, say it's by intinction. And as you're getting ready to dip your bread into the, it's not wine here, is it? Juice. It will occur to you that there is somebody in your life sitting out here right now with whom you are not getting along. And you have pulled back from that relationship and you've fallen into a kind of a, hey, you know what? If they're having a problem, I didn't intend for there to be a problem. So as long as I didn't intend for it, it's not really my problem. If they have an issue, they'll have to come to me. That will all occur to you while you're getting ready to take communion. I remind you in the Sermon on the Mount, the Jew that Jesus is talking about is performing the center of the Jewish religion called a sacrifice. While he is burning his sacrifice, it occurs to him there is a problem with somebody in his life. You know what he does? He doesn't even take communion. He puts the elements down. He turns around. He goes outside. He finds the person with whom he's having a problem. And he pulls him aside and says, we've got a problem. And he waits until he is reconciled with his friend out there before he ever comes back in and takes communion again. That's huge, people. He doesn't use communion. He doesn't use communion as a way to say, we all sin, don't we, every day. And use it as forgiveness. He uses it as examination. And if his heart is not pure with his friend, he's not ready for it. Jesus says, I will come to you as someone who you disagree with. How will you respond to me then? Jesus says in the Sermon on the Mount, I will come to you as someone that you love. Someone that you love. And the beauty of this is, if we love somebody, we always treat them better. Right? The truth of the matter is, we are sometimes hardest on people that we love. And I figured out one day why that was. And it was because I think as humans, we don't know how to love. The only person that I ever loved was me. And so when my wife and I were starting to date, and you know, I was doing what you're doing. First you see him and you kind of go, oh, she's pretty hot. And you try to arrange a date and you finally get it and things start to go well. And then finally the day comes when you can say to them, I love you. And she says, are we in love? She was the one that asked first. She goes, Steve, are we in love? Yeah. I gave her some reply that I will not repeat. My kids don't even know the answer. It was so stupid. God, I wish I had that moment to do over again. Dude, don't ever do that. That's called fumble, big time. I blew the line, but I remember about a month later, as we were talking about it, I told her that I did love her, and then a little bit after that, I asked her to marry me. But the whole time I said that I loved her, the person I really loved was me. I didn't know it then. I can see it now as I get a little bit older. The truth of the matter was, I loved me so much that I wanted to be happy. And I was happier when she was with me than when she was not. And so, if you want to be happy for the rest of your life, why would you not ask somebody who makes you happy to live with you? That's called marriage. Pretty sick, isn't it? But see, I didn't realize this at the time. If you would have asked me if I loved her, I would have said yes. But the truth of the matter is, I didn't. I only loved me, and here's the problem. Thomas Merton says, true love can only be had by giving it away. And so unless I learn to love another person, In the genuine Christian sense, the love that I have, even for me, will shrivel up and become something worse, like lust. And so Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount talks to believers about lust. And why is there a problem with lust? Because the believer that he's talking to does not yet know how to love. Let me put it to you like this. To the degree that you lust for somebody else, and it doesn't matter whether you're a student or whether you're faculty or whether you're administration, what I'm learning as a pastor is that lust has no statute of limitations. And what I've learned in every situation is this: to the degree that I struggle with lust, to that degree I still do not know what it means to love. Love to me is like a flower, like this right here, only it needs a flower. Here, we'll call this the flower. Woo! In every single relationship, listen closely, in every single relationship, there is such a thing as self-sacrificing, self-giving love. It's the part of you that makes you lay down your life for another person. That's the seed, that's the soil. That's where the roots of that relationship go. Out of that kind of a self-giving, self-forgetting, others absorbed in kind of person grows the stem of the flower. This is things like personalities, friendship, chemistries, sacrifice, time together. It's all of those things that make you grow in fondness for somebody. Out of that fondness that you have for another person comes the flower, which is sex. You live in an American culture that has severed the flower from the rest of the plant, speaking only to you about sexuality. It's the only thing you see on the movies. You never see this, and you don't see this for long, except that it always leads to this. And whenever you sever the flower from the rest of the plant, the flower will live for a little while, but then it will die, because it is severed from the life. That explains, by the way, why you never lust for the same person for very long. Your object always changes from time to time. Do you know why? Because the only thing you're after is the result. And when you sever that from the actual relationship, of course it gets boring and you move on. It also explains, by the way, why men are not cured of their lust just by getting married. Because lust at its core is not a problem with sex. It's a problem of love. It's that a person doesn't know how to love. And getting married doesn't fix that. Now, there are couples who would start with the flower and believe that if they just do this, they can create the plant. But it never works that way, my friend. Never works that way. And so Jesus will come to us and he will say, I say to you that if you look upon a woman and you lust after her in your heart, or upon a man, and you lust after him in your heart, you've already committed adultery. Says Jesus, the matter with lust is not an imagination of the mind, it is an act of the heart. And the only way that you fix it is by learning to love. When I discovered that, and it took me years to discover that, I stopped praying that God would take away my lust. And I started praying that he would just teach me how to love. And that was a hard prayer, because I grew up in a pretty good Christian home. My parents are stalwart Christians. They are strong Christians. But that doesn't mean I know what love is. It just means I grew up in a loving home. And it occurred to me one day that I don't know what it is, and I was a preacher, for crying out loud. But when I began to pray that God would teach me to love, do you know what he said? Something like this: if you want to learn how to love, then I want you to find the most unattractive person you could find, and I want you to love them. Find the person who annoys you and learn to love them. Steve, the people that bug you are the only ones here who can help you. Your failure to conquer this problem is your failure to learn how to love. And that became a whole different dialogue, my friends. Am I speaking to anyone this morning who struggles with this? And you've asked God 1,000 times to take this thing away, and you keep thinking, you know what, maybe someday he will, then I'll be sanctified. Or maybe you've already given up, and you said, no, this just must be human. Or maybe you've said to yourself, I guess I just got to get old. None of that's true. None of that is true. It can be conquered in this lifetime once you learn how to love. Last, Jesus says, I will come to you as an enemy. He says in the Sermon on the Mount, pray for your enemies, those who you despise. Pray for them. If you are a holy person, practice it by loving me when I show up as your enemy. So, who is this? Jeez, they're all over the place. It's the lady who has 18 things in her cart on an express checkout in Walmart. Come on. It's the fogey driver who like blinks and turns 2 lanes over. It's the person who takes stuff that belongs to you. It's the professor who you don't get along with, and they give you a grade lower than you deserve. It's the person in the dorm who thinks she is so hot just because is dating her. Them. It's them. It's the guy in the intramural sports program whose team always keeps winning, but he ain't that good of a player. But he keeps talking. Rah, 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 rah. You just want to go, you stink, man. It's the RA, the resident assistant, who keeps checking on you, bugging you. Are you watching that joke? Can't watch that movie now. Like you're some member of Al-Qaeda or something. Man, lighten up. I mean, my daughter had one of these. Don't watch Friends. It's all about sex. All about sex. Say, dude, you got the problem. My goodness. I mean, it's them. It's these people. You just want to sit them down and tune them up. And Jesus says, what if I came to you like that? I had a friend of mine says, I leave church. I go into Elder Bierman, it's a department store. And he goes, I couldn't believe it. This lady, she can't even ring the cash register up. And I'm just getting ready to say, look, if this isn't rocket science, honey, then it occurs to me, Jesus doesn't know how to run the cash register. He said, I pull out of Elder Bierman's, I get in the bypass, I'm driving home. And he goes, you won't believe it, Pastor. Jesus, this is going to be a fit, in the form of an idiot, cuts right in front of me. Now, some of you are thinking, I can't believe you would think this. I can't believe that you would think Jesus would ever come in such a way. Well, I can't either, but I'm learning this. Anyone who is capable of coming to this earth through a 14 or 15-year-old unmarried virgin, laying in a feeding trough in the middle of some field, not in the temple where we think he should be, riding on the back of a mule and impaling himself on the sides of a cross, is perfectly capable of coming in some way that we would not predict. Amen? We might have built categories of people that are cool and not cool, and he always comes as the cool. And what if he comes to you this week in 1,000 different ways as someone who is not cool? Now, you must learn your holiness there. Remember the story of the sheep and the goats? Jesus said, in that last day, they will all stand before me. And I will look at some and I will say, I was hungry and thirsty and naked and I was in prison and you did not help me. And then I will look at the other group and I will say, I was hungry, naked, and I was in prison, and you helped me. Now listen, both groups of people will look at him on that day and say, when did we ever see you hungry, naked, and in prison? Please let the record show that neither side ever knew it was him they were helping when they helped him. The ones who helped him didn't do it because they wanted to go to heaven. They did it because it was their nature to do it. Now, my question to you this morning as we close is this. Do you want to be holy? Well, of course you do. You have more power than any generation previous to you to live out this message. You can change the world. If you want to be holy, you get to start today. You get to start with people with whom you misunderstand. There's a misunderstanding. There's an argument. You get to practice by loving people who annoy you, who are undesirable. You get to do this by showing patience and tolerance and genuine love to those who might be your enemies. If you love Jesus, practice there. Would you stand with me? I want to sing one verse, and as I sing this verse, am I speaking to anyone this morning who says, I need to take the next step. Steve, I need to find the person with whom I'm having an argument. I will search them out and I will have this conversation. Steve, I too am having a problem with lust. Why? I desire to possess somebody for myself. And I'm learning that I must learn to give myself to everyone else. And I will get over this. I want you to find somebody. I want you to get together with a group of people of the same gender on this campus. And I'd love it if you'd talk about that. Or if you would say, there is one person in my life right now who is particularly annoying. They are the obstacle to holiness. God has told me. And this morning, I want you to say, I will make it right with that person. We're going to sing one verse. And if that's you that I've just described, would you respond by stepping just into the aisles right here? If you're upstairs, maybe step out a little bit. Try to separate yourself. Sing this, I think, theme song here of the junior class. And we'll wait for you. Take my life and let it be consecrated, Lord, to Thee. Take my moments and my days. Let them flow in ceaseless praise. Let them flow in ceaseless praise. Bow our heads for prayer. Lord, I have come to this place, a place where there has been a couple of great revivals. And together with the faculty and the administration and so many of these students, Jesus, I pray for another. And yet I pray for one that does not start in Hughes Auditorium. I pray for one that starts in dorm rooms and in classrooms and on athletic fields and in the commons and the cafeteria, in the labs. I pray for revivals there when the genuine people of God rise up and respond to the Jesus already in front of them. Now, in the name of Christ, I commit those who have responded. May your name be glorified in their lives. Amen and amen.